Man, I am so excited to introduce our very special guest. This gentleman has been an inspiration and a role model for generations of musicians, okay? There are so many guitar players and so many musicians who've been inspired by this gentleman, including myself, including everyone else on this stage. I'm really proud to present him, Mr. George Benson. George, what are we going to do? We're going to do some Donny Hathaway?
Let's do that. Let's do a little bit of the ghetto.
All right, George Benson, the ghetto. Come on, Randy, give it to us. The ghetto. Thank you. Hey, George, you guys did an album back in the 80s, you and Earl Clue. Now, Earl Clue, he was kind of like a protege of yours, wasn't he?
That's true. Yeah, he's one of my favorite guitar players. He was just a kid when I met him. He was playing classical guitar. Yeah. He wanted to play jazz.
Yeah.
And I convinced him to take a couple of gigs with some great jazz artists, which he was reluctant at first. But what he learned in that short period of time was truly amazing, and he's become one of the top guitar players in America.
Must have been incredible for him to have an opportunity to do an album with you, with his
and
mentor.
And you and I were on that album together.
It was you and Earl. Harvey Mason played drums.
That's right.
Greg Fillinganes on piano, myself on bass. We had a great time. The album was called Collaboration.
That's right.
Can we do a song from Collaboration?
I think so.
Can we do my favorite one?
What is
Brazilian
that?
Stomp.
Okay.
You remember it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Brazilian Stomp. Come on, let's go. Thank you. song, Brazilian Stomp. It's so nice. Thank you so much, George, for allowing us to play a song from that collaboration album. It turns out also, I forgot to mention that Paul Jackson Jr., he also played on that collaboration album
That's
with you and Earl Klugh and all the guys. So thanks for putting the family back together. Hey, let's do a George Benson hit. No, let's do a George Benson smash, Paul Jackson, a smash. He's got a few of them, but we're going to do this particular one. I'm not going to announce it because you all should know it. Come on, Randy, let's do it.
Falling. Don't you know the spirit of the part is to come alive till the day is dawning? We can throw out all the blues, the city lights, 'cause there's music in the air and lots of love in everywhere. A chain reaction. You see the people of the world coming out to dance. 'Cause there's music in the air and lots of love and everywhere. So give me the night. All right, tonight. Give me the night. Every night.
So come on out tonight. We'll leave the others on the run through paradise.
Thank you.
George Benson, y'all. Come on now. Hey, Brian, can we get some stools? I just want to have a little conversation with Mr. Benson. Such an incredible career, such an incredible musical life. Let's see if we can get some information from Mr. Benson.
All right. Thank
you. All right, so Mr. Benson, I got a couple of questions that I have to get straight. First of all, we just played Gimme the Night. And to do some research, I checked out the video that you all did in the 80s, Gimme the Night. And it looks like you had a stunt double who was roller skating his butt off and playing the guitar at the same time. Who was the stunt double?
No double, that's me, baby.
Wait, that was you?
That's right. It was a heck of a day, to tell you the truth. I went over to do you know, the record was blown up on the chart. It was going straight to number one. It was headed to number one.
Yeah.
And they said, man, let's go over to the beach. And the roller skaters are coming by with their boom boxes on their shoulder.
Right.
And you stand in the sunset and let them roll by you. That's a good vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, where are my skates? They said, you don't have to skate.
Right.
I said, I don't want to skate. They said, but George, you don't have to.
Right.
They said, why do you want to skate? I said, of course, ain't nobody that can beat me skating. That's why. That's first of all.
Nobody knew. Nobody knew that you could skate like that. You're skating backwards, forwards, playing the guitar at the same time. That was a surprise, man. Okay, so that's back in the 80s. That was one surprise. Here's another surprise. I was just looking at music videos, recent music videos, and I saw the new song by Bootsy Collins. And there's a guitar player, Mr. George Benson, on Bootsy Collins, and the record's funky, too. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I'm not a funk artist, but I love to hear people do what they do as long as they do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And funky music, you got to be, you're either funky or you're not.
Exactly.
I didn't think I was funky enough to be on a Bootsy Collins album.
Man, it ate. For
but
all
he
of you
thought
guys,
I was.
Check it out. Bootsy has a new song out. I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. But George Benson is playing guitar, and you're killing it. And you right
it's called On the One.
On the One, of course. What else would it be called, Bootsy Collins, On the One? Man, that thing is killing. George, Pittsburgh, what was the scene like when you were coming up? First of all, were you a guitarist when you first started out? How old were you? I think you were 5 or 6 years old when you started, right? Or were you were singing mostly, weren't you?
Yeah, I was known as Little Georgie Benson on the street corners when I had my ukulele. And people used to play me quarters to, you know, stop me and ask me if I'd do a song, and they'd give me some quarters and things. So I was a professional at 7 years old, getting paid for what I did.
What kind of songs were you singing?
Whatever was on the jukebox. You
so
know,
you could sing all the popular
good.
Songs?
Yeah, my ears were good from the beginning, from the very beginning.
You told me that you were delivering newspapers for a while, and you were getting paid a certain amount of money, a little bit of change.
The amazing thing is I only sold one newspaper in my whole life. One.
What happened?
It was my first day. I had just turned 7. You had to be at least 7 years old to sell newspapers. So
mm-hmm.
I was late getting there, so I didn't have enough time to take my ukulele back upstairs in the house because I was serenading my girlfriends on the step, you know.
7 years old, he had girlfriends.
And I looked at the clock, said 7 o'clock. I shot out with my ukulele,
mm-hmm.
and I gave it to the guy. And I said, hold this until I come back. He gave me 5 newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I was so little, nobody heard me. You know, I was saying, you want a newspaper?
Right.
And I was almost in tears, and the guy came with that. Hey, little boy, give me one of those newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I hustled, man. I gave him the newspaper, and he gave me a quarter, but I didn't have no change.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost went into tears.
Because mm-hmm. you had to give him change.
And the guy said, keep change.
How much was the newspaper?
Newspaper was 5 cents.
Okay.
So I had a 20-cent tip in addition to the 1 cent I got for selling that paper. So I was rich for a 7-year-old. So I quit.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the place to cashing my newspapers, and I was going to buy some candy. Mm-hmm. And somebody saw me with that uke in the store, and they said, "Hey, little boy, can you play that thing?" Mm-hmm. I started playing, and the crowd came around. And my cousin came in the door and took off his baseball cap because I couldn't collect money and sing and dance at the same time.
See, your cousin was he was fast on his feet. He took his hat off his head and put it down to collect change, huh?
Yeah. A little ball, man.
How much did you make?
First night, it must have been a lot of money because the next morning my mother saw this money coming out from under my pillow. And mostly quarters and 50-cent pieces. 50-cent pieces were very popular at that time.
Okay, yeah.
So I had a lot of that.
Wow, man.
Mm-hmm.
You sang for a very famous singer once. And then later on when you became George Benson the star, you told that singer that you had performed for him earlier on. Who was that?
Eddie Jefferson. To me, he was the greatest jazz singer in the world. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a voice like him. Mm-hmm. And he's also the man who wrote the lyrics to Moody's Mood for Love.
There I go, there I go, there mm-hmm. I go. Yeah.
He didn't think that I remembered that. Yeah. I remember these guys rolling around on the ground when I started singing. And I never knew what they were laughing about. And so 20 years later, I was in New York. He said, "George, you won't remember this." And I said, "I hope he's not going to tell me about that he was one of the guys who was rolling on the ground." He said, "When you were 7, I asked you, I gave you a quarter." And I said, I know who that was. Really? He said, "You don't remember that?" I said, "Yes, I do."
Wow.
He said, "How do you remember that?" I said, "Because I know the man who was with you. He taught me how to play ping pong and shoot pool. His name was Nesbitt."
Nesbitt.
He said, "That's it."
So did you sing a Eddie Jefferson song for Eddie Jefferson when you were 7?
I was singing his first recording. It was called "I Got the Blues."
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous tune, and nobody could sing it like Eddie Jefferson. He
right.
was a master musician.
So I also want to talk about your gift of mimicry, okay? Because I personally witnessed you singing like Luther Vandross. You just told me you could sing like Eddie Jefferson. Just in a rehearsal, you were singing like Sarah Vaughan. And I remember we were doing an Aretha Franklin session back in the day, and you showed up because you and Aretha were talking about perhaps doing a duet.
Yeah.
And so you were talking to Rod Temperton, who was an incredible songwriter, who had written so many hits for Michael Jackson, for you also. And you just decided to do a Aretha Franklin impression in front of Aretha Franklin. Not that many people are bold enough to imitate Aretha in front of her. But you sounded just like her.
I didn't think anybody would take me serious, you know, so I didn't mind doing those things.
You sounded too good for people not to take you seriously, man.
I think that if you're going to do something, you might as well do it well, you know. But there's only one Aretha Franklin in the world, and there's only one that comes into my mind. So if I didn't capture her character, then to me it wasn't Aretha Franklin. But she has a certain character when she sings that nobody else has. So I was able to capture that. And it's harder for me to do that now in these years. But in those days, I was right on the money with it.
Now, wait a minute. You just did a little Sarah Vaughan. You got any Sarah Vaughan in you?
Well, I don't know. Her whole thing was she was semi-classical because she sang with the great Billy Eckstein.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be like Billy.
Yes.
Billy was the most popular African-American singer before Nat Cole came along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so Billy sang with a lot of, you know, perfect English, first of all. That's what made him so popular.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a little bit of that, too. And she said, "Here we are, helplessly snowbound in a world not one for two, and if the one..." Something like that.
Now, so many voices come out of you. We just did "Give Me the Night." That voice that you used to sing "Give Me the Night," we had never heard from you before, okay? Mm-hmm. We had heard "Masquerade," we had heard "On Broadway." That was the George Benson that we had gotten to know, the voice, right? Then all of a sudden, "Give Me the Night" came out. Who was that? Were you imitating anybody for "Give Me the Night"?
It was a fluke, man. I was finished with the album, "Give Me the Night." Name was the album. Eventually, it was called "Give Me the Night" because the song was so strong.
Mm-hmm.
But I had already finished the album, and I was on my way back to Hawaii, where I was living at the time. And Quincy called me up just before I got ready to get in the cab to go to the airport. And he said, "George, you got one more song, man. We got one more song for you to do." I said, "No, Quincy, no, I'm tired. I've been in the studio every night for a month. That's enough." He said, "No, Rod wrote this great song, man. You gotta hear it." I said, "Man, okay, I'm gonna do one more song." So we were in the studio fiddling around trying to make it work, and I finally got tired. I said, "Whenever dark is found," he said, "George, can you put me one down like that?" I said, "No, man. I know you, Quincy. You put that out." He said, "No, man, I'm not gonna put it out, man. I'm telling you, I'm not gonna put it out." You know he did, though.
Millions of records later.
Here's what's so great. He sent me the test pressing. I was getting anxious. I said, "I wonder if he used that terrible vocal that I did." You know, what he was looking for was attitude, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he sent me the test pressing, and my youngest boy was there, and I put it on. And sure enough, he used that weird vocal. But it didn't sound bad, because he did a great job on the production.
It sounds great.
And I took it off.
Yeah.
And put it up. And my son came and yanked me on my leg. "Hey, Dad." I said, "What is it, man?" He said, "Can you play that song that goes, 'All right, tonight'?" And I knew I had a smash.
There you go.
Because my kids never asked me anything about music ever before.
Wow. So I want to go back, because a lot of people know you for all the hits. I mean, in the 80s were incredible, because in the 80s, we had every week they had the charts, you know, the pop charts. And you'd see Michael Jackson, number one, or Prince was number one. Or Michael was number one, Prince was number two, or Prince was number one, Michael's number two. But like number three or number four for the entire 80s, George, was you. You were just quietly just killing it for like a whole decade into the 90s. And it's just incredible, because there are a lot of people who don't know that you were the gold standard as a jazz guitarist before that. This was kind of like your second career. And, you know, a lot of jazz fans, I don't know if they were disappointed, but they were trying to be critical, because they're like, "Hey, George Benson, now he's singing and he's going for the pop thing." How did you deal with the criticism? I mean, was it something that bothered you, or did you ignore it? What was it like for you?
I used to hang out with all the greats when they came to my hometown to play. I used to hunt them down, ask them if they would show me something. If it was a guitar player, he was in trouble, because I hounded them, all of them.
Yeah.
But I also knew other musicians, you know, piano players, horn players. And they told me all the stories. The story about Nat Cole, you know, about Billy Eckstein, why they called him Billy, you know, and Lena Horne and all of them. But I remember the ones that had the big hits telling me, "Man, I'm not going to play that song no more, because I'm tired of it, man. Mm-hmm. I'm sick and tired of that." Mm-hmm. I said to myself, "But wait a minute, man. This man got a smash. He can't stop playing his hits." Mm-hmm. All the ones that stopped playing their hits, their career took a dive. So I said, "Man, if I ever get a hit record, I'm not going to get tired." Mm-hmm. But now there is a secret there. There is a medium that you have to reach. Don't record a song that you don't like, because you might have to play it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So we know you like it.
We know some people who that happened to, right?
Yeah.
They recorded a song. It was a goof. You know, they were just like, "I'm going to throw this on." And it became like a number one record. And they're like, "I don't want to have to sing this song for the rest of my life." You don't seem to have the problem. You love Masquerade, don't you?
Yeah. I had already adapted that vibe. If you don't like it, don't record it, because you might have to sing it the rest of your life. Yeah. And when Tommy La Puma brought me that song the first time, I didn't particularly think it was anything, you know, special. I liked the way Leon Russell had recorded it, and I said, "Hey, man, he sounds like he's right on the money." He took the song Angel Eyes, wrote new lyrics, and changed the melody around. Beautiful, beautiful vibe. I applauded him.
Yeah.
But Tommy kept on my back. "Man, George, did you learn that song yet?" I said, "No, I didn't learn it." So finally, I learned it.
Masquerade.
And we went in the studio, and then he said, "George, we're not going to do the vocal." I said, "What are you talking about, man?"
After you learned it, he decided he wanted to do an instrumental?
Decided, because all the instrumentals were going so good.
Yeah.
He said, "No, I'm not going to put no vocal in this album, man." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Suppose the vocal becomes a hit. We have nothing else in the album to back it up."
Right.
I said, "Give me a hit, man. I don't care how we get it. You know?
I'll work out the other problems later."
It became a smash. He did record it. We only did one take. He only gave me one chance to do it.
So Masquerade was one take?
One take only.
You killed it. Jorge Dalto on the piano killed it. That was just one take.
One take. And I remember Bobby Womack coming in the studio because we were going to record his song, Breezin', next.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Womack wrote Breezin'. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when he came in, he said, who in the world ain't got a voice like that? He was listening at the playback for This Masquerade.
Right.
Who in the world, he didn't use the word world. And he's got a voice like that.
Yeah.
And he said, man, that's George. Yeah, but I thought George was a guitar player. He said, well, yeah, he's a guitar player. But he forgets, so was he. He's a guitar player, too, and he sings.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tommy LaPoma took that thing over to Warner Brothers and busted up there. They were having a weekend meeting or something.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, forget about the meeting, man. You got to hear this. And he said, man, what's going on, Tommy?
Yeah.
And Al Schmidt, the great engineer, set up his special speakers.
Yeah.
And he played that. They said, who was that? He said, it's the new guy you just signed. George Benson. But I thought he was a guitar player.
Yeah.
They did the whole trip.
So what was it like, man? Because you went from, was Bad Benson the album right before Masquerade?
There was one in between.
Before Breezin', I mean? Yes.
Yeah. There was one in between that. But we were reaching a pinnacle as a guitar player.
Right.
We started making.
You were the number one jazz guitarist in the world. And you felt like you were getting to the top of that. Where else? What else do I do? What was it like?
I was hanging out with the baddest cats.
What was it like when Masquerade just kind of took off?
A whole different world, because we won Record of the Year at the Grammy Awards.
Yeah.
And that really took it to another place for real. I mean, it would have been a fluke, and everybody would have said, you were very fortunate, George.
Yes.
You know, nice hit.
One hit wonder. That's mm-hmm. what they thought you were going to be.
Mm-hmm. But after that, it seemed like I moved to another planet called Bensonville, because we couldn't do anything wrong after that. They called us from everywhere in the world, man. And we had something I never had, some money. So I bought my family a beautiful home, bought several cars, bought all my boys mopeds.
Yes.
Wow. You know, so forth and so on.
It just changed your life.
Yeah.
You were, for me, you're part of the guitar lineage. I'm talking about Charlie Christian. Charlie Christian played guitar with Benny Goodman back late 30s, early 40s. And then, of course, we had Wes Montgomery. And then in my mind, it's George Benson. Did you know Wes Montgomery? Had you met him?
Yeah. He was my mentor. Nobody could play like him. I even tried one time. I said, where is he coming from, man? I tried to play some of those things he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't, because I didn't have the mentality that he had. He, mm-hmm. he played guitar like a pianist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He had all those harmonies that those cats used to play in the midnight hours, and they played all of them. Dungy nightclubs.
Yeah.
And he was just a magnificent thinker. He had a beautiful mind. But what I learned by hanging around with him was how to relate to other people,
mm-hmm.
being a star, because he was the most sought-after musician. He and John Coltrane dominated the jazz music world, and Miles Davis, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I learned from him. My favorite guitar player was Grant Green.
Okay, yes.
I liked his lyricism. There was something that was reachable for me, you know, because he played blues licks and he played like a regular guitar player, only a little better.
did Wes or Grant Green, did either of them hear you play? What did they think about your playing?
Grant Green was a kind of a jealous guy. He saw me. Well, he had right to be, because mm-hmm. I was trying to steal all the licks I could. I was borrowing everything I heard him play. Montgomery let me hang out with him. We used to do chicken and waffles, you know, at Wells in New York.
Wait, you played at Wells?
Well, yeah, of course.
Wells is the famous chicken and waffle place in New York City, uptown in Harlem. And after a jazz gig, well, not after the gig, you do the gig at Wells. And then after, sometimes they didn't pay us with money, George. They paid us with chicken and waffles. So you play with Wes?
I played at Wells. Yeah, I remember sitting in with Grant Green there.
Oh, you played with Grant Green there, yeah.
He invited me up to play with him. I said, man, I can't play with Grant Green, man, you know. And when we came up the stage, they said, that young boy kicked his booty green.
Hey, man, thank you so much for hanging out with us, man, and blessing us with your presence, man, and your music. You are truly an inspiration. You know what you did for us when you did the jazz thing and then you did the pop thing? You showed us all, the young musicians, go as far as your talent will take you. Don't let anybody limit you. You were kind of like the gold standard, man. So Just want to thank you. Can we do one more song? We got time?
Marcus. I love you guys. George, absolutely love you. Joey's back. Listen, the powers that be sent me out here, Marcus. Music, Marcus.
Hey. Okay, we can do one more song, right, George? You got one more in you?
I don't know. Can we?
Yeah, man, we got time, right? We paid the electric bill.
Oh, we got time. As a matter of fact, we got time for music. Not too much talking time, but we got time for music.
All right. Hey, man, one more time for George Benson, y'all. Let's do another smash. Can we do another smash? We're not going to tell you which one this one either. We're not going to tell you which one this one. We're not going to tell you which one this is either. There we go.
On Broadway.
some for us.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.